Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important and fastest-growing segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, media, as well as academic institutions are corrupt, that most of them are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission is to look behind the headlines to know who is working against our interests, to understand why and how they're doing so. Because ultimately exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful, it's caring. In our concluding hour, we are going to examine the difference between Paul's letters and what God has to say, so that we can rid Christians of their New Testament and point them in the right direction. In our second hour today, we will do sports in the news. There's a number of happenings that are worth discussing, and so I hope you join us for that segment as well. A 7.9 magnitude earthquake struck under the Alaska Aleutian Islands. Now, there's not a lot of people living on the Aleutian Islands. It's pretty sparsely populated. I am quite certain it scared some salmon and probably some Kodiak bear half to death. But the only reason it's worth mentioning is that this earthquake, which was initially measured at a magnitude 8, that's a very big earthquake. We've got now magnitude 8 earthquakes occurring up and down the fault line. It goes from Alaska down to Tierra del Fuego, the southern tip of Chile. And they are happening with alarming frequency. And a 8.0 earthquake, should an earthquake like this manifest itself near a inhabited area, like if this had occurred near Anchorage, if this were to occur near Santiago, Chile, if this were to occur near San Francisco, Seattle, Los Angeles, anywhere down this this fault line, the carnage could just be unimaginable. You know, it could be in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. This is a very serious incident. Reuters is announcing that Obama Nation had a report conducted to sell Americans on the idea that they should pay a little now to avoid paying a lot more later. He's going to attempt to make all of the concessions that he wants to make against industry, against progress, that assure that the world continues to enrich the OPECers, which will continue to fuel Islamic terrorism, through the myth of global warming. The report reads as follows. Annual property losses from hurricanes and other coastal storms of $35 billion, a decline in crop yields of 14%, costing corn and wheat farmers tens of billions of dollars, heat wave-driven demand for electricity costing utilities customers up to $12 billion a year. These are among the economic costs that climate change is expected to extract in the United States over the next 25 years, according to a bipartisan report released on Tuesday. That's just for starters. The price tag could soar to the hundreds of billions of dollars by 2100. Oh, my. You know, if you're concerned about a price tag in the hundreds of billions of dollars, get rid of the U.S. military. It's counterproductive. Everything it touches, it breaks. It's making America vastly less safe. Its invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan were suicidal. No, I can tell you, if your goal is to save money, disband the U.S. military. And while you're at it, disband Medicare and Medicaid. And while you're at it, disband Social Security. You could save, $850 billion a year disbanding Medicare and Medicaid? Yeah, go back to the old-fashioned system of people paying for their own health care. Yeah, that's a heck of an idea. Go back to, if you want to make it cheaper, pass tort reform. Get rid of malpractice lawsuits, or make malpractice lawsuits vastly less punitive. Get rid of malpractice and you could radically lower the price of pharmaceuticals, change the laws on copyrights and patent protections as well. You could drive down the cost of health care by probably 70-80% just by being prudent. You know, don't have the federal government pay for things like heart bypasses for those who either are obese or have don't do expensive chemotherapy for those that smoke. You know, if you do those things and you can pay for your own health care, great. But if you do those things and you can't pay for it, don't burden society with it. And don't spend 80% of the health care on one's life in the last 2 or 3 years trying to prolong misery for a short period of time. Live your life in such a way that you don't need to extract millions of dollars from the federal government and taxpayers to prolong the misery. I mean, Social Security, get rid of it. Just be responsible, folks. No, invest in your own retirement along the way. Now, I understand there's some people that are absolutely dependent on it and something would need to be done for those. But for the mass majority of people, there ought not have been Social Security. And no one should be entitled to more than they paid in. And lots of people are being paid lots more than they paid in. Now, it's $800 billion here, $850 billion there between the spine and the military. It's a $1 trillion. Don't need to worry about the hundreds of billions by 2100. Do the right thing now. Save trillions. Now, as for climate change, doing these things, climate change is if we first have to say that the only reason they're using the term climate change is because they can no longer prove global warming. Now, we're actually in a warming period. A warming period began right after the Little Ice Age. The Little Ice Age ended around 1850 to 1875. It's part of the 600-year cycles of cooling and warming that have been affecting this planet for millions of years. Proof of that is overwhelming. It is undeniable that the Earth goes through 600 to 700-year cooling and warming periods and has, way back before man walked on this planet, has nothing to do with humankind. The reason that the glaciers, for example, have retreated is that photography was invented right at the terminus of the last cooling period, and therefore as we moved into the warming period, they would retreat. As we end this warming period, they will flow again. Now, the reason that they can't use global warming, even though we are in a warming period, is that for the last 16 years, when we finally had sophisticated data recording instruments well distributed around the world, reporting to satellites so that we have accurate information across the globe, during that period of time, the Earth's temperature on average has cooled. So we actually have a problem right now. No one wants to tell you this because they can't extract money based on this. They can't scare you based on this. But in the midst of a warming period, we've had a prolonged cooling period. And no one knows why. That's the reality. Now, there are going to be lots of hurricanes, lots of tornadoes. Now, it's kind of interesting. Tornadoes have actually been on a decrease in these last 4 or 5 years. Hurricanes have been on an increase these last 4 or 5 years. But there is no indication that climate change is any different than climate change has always been. And to blame every heat wave, every drought, every flood, every storm on man is absolutely ludicrous. So this whole thing is a pile of crock that is specifically designed to control the masses. It's a way for elitists to gain control because their plan is to tax the most prosperous people. That would mean Americans, Europeans, And particularly those also living in places like Australia and New Zealand, to tax those individuals and distribute the money to the masses who are underdeveloped. And by doing so, they develop enormous popularity and their power base for themselves, while eroding the power and influence away from those that they're robbing, that could otherwise usurp their ability to control the masses. It's the reason that socialism empowers the few against the many. This is their goal. And they want to diminish coal-powered plants. They wish to diminish production of energy so they can ration it. So that right now I live under the auspices of an incompetent water district and draconian penalties for using 50 to 60% less water than I used a year ago. Electricity will be monitored the same way. And then after electricity, it'll be gasoline. And they will control everyone's lives. That's what they're seeking to do. Now, my voice is not loud enough. This platform is not pervasive enough to thwart them. But you are forewarned, so you are forearmed. Global warming is not true. It was, we are in a warming period, but having nothing to do with man. So man-made global warming is a complete and utter lie. Global warming was in effect coming out of the Little Ice Age around 1850 to 1875, but it has stalled. The last 16 years, we've gone through a cooling period. And climate change is a nonsensical statement. Now, beyond all of this, every one of their forecasts was for the Arctic to be ice-free last summer. And yet, ice protruded further down last summer than any time in recorded history. Everything they have predicted has not been true. There is no science here. This is all a political and economic power grab. And now what they're trying to do is to scare you, to say, oh, if you don't side with us, then you are part of the problem. We can blame you every time a hurricane strikes. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The IRS, as most of our listeners know, targeted conservative political groups, particularly the Tea Party, for harassment, for special investigation and for harassment. And this decision was made shortly after the head of the IRS met with the President of the United States. There's a direct trail of meetings between the President and the head of the IRS, and then the dispatch of information to the office in Ohio that processes these kinds of 501(c) cases against conservative political groups. And so the commissioner of the IRS, the new commissioner, because the old guy was canned based upon, I don't know if it was a guy or a girl, but the old commissioner was canned based upon what was obviously a wholly inappropriate use of the Internal Revenue Service by the Obama administration. The new fellow said, I'll be totally transparent with you. I'll tell you everything that we know. I'll give you all of the emails between the offices of the IRS and the White House so you can see exactly what we know. Well, he was in front of Congress today or yesterday, and guess what he admitted? Well, you know, I really don't have any emails that I can show you because, you see, we had a computer crash. And one of our hard drives, it was corrupted. And all of those emails back then when we were discussing this, they're all gone. I can't give them to you anymore. You believe him? Or is this just one of a thousand reasons you should not trust your government? I lean towards you should not trust your government. Baghdad, the Iraqi government said on Sunday that Sunni militants had taken over a major Iraqi post along the Syrian border, strengthening their ability to move men and supplies into Iraq's heartland. The fact is, they control every aspect of Western and Northwestern Iraq. All of it's under their absolute control. And they control all of Eastern Syria and Northern Syria. Damascus is in the really the southernmost part of Syria. So if you were to look at geographically at Syria, ISIS controls probably 60% of Syria. Now, that's not to say that the Assad regime controls the remaining 40%, because it is split between al-Nusra Front and the Assad regime. But ISIS is not to be trifled at. ISIS does control about 60% of Syrian territory. Now, it's the least populated part of Syria in the eastern part of the country and in the north. But it means that there is essentially no border between Syria and Iraq. It is now one battlefield. And it also means that ISIS has zero problem now moving men and materiel into various regions. As the government tried to cast the setback in a positive light, I just love governments. They're masters at spinning things, just like all politicians, saying that troops made a tactical decision to withdraw. Yes, we retreated, but it was tactical. Secretary of State John Kerry, who was browbeating Israel into surrendering the West Bank so that they would become so vulnerable to Muslims, they would be destroyed, kind of like Czechoslovakia in World War II, and then went from there to browbeating the Russians for doing precisely what America was doing, stirring up all sorts of anarchy in Ukraine, and then in the meantime going over to China to accuse the Chinese of spying on Americans, when in fact the Americans were vastly more engaged in spying on China, and then accuse the Chinese of being aggressive in their coastal waters, when America's claims to its coastal waters greatly exceed what China has done. That now he is over there in Iraq. He's actually in Iraq. Yes, he is going to be directing the response in Iraq because, well, after all, the world belongs to the United States, according to the Obama administration. So he's there and saying, and he's going to apply more pressure on Iraq's leadership by signaling that the United States was open to the selection of a new prime minister. Open to a new prime minister. This is just like Vietnam. All over again. We're not open to the idea of a new leader. This is a coup. We're saying you put in a new leader or we won't supply any more toys for you to go fight against your own people. But if you put in a new leader, we'll give you more military hardware to go fight against your own people. We just love a civil war. We talked about this some yesterday, but the United States government is saying they want to see the Iraqi people find leadership that is prepared to represent all of the people of Iraq, Mr. Kerry said in Cairo at the start of a Middle East trip to rally Arab support on the Iraq crisis. Now, why would you want to rally Arab support? And why would you want to do that? Just talk about how stupid you could be. You know, in the ISIS battle is between Arab and Persian. You know, in Syria, the battle is between Sunni and Shiite. In Iraq, while the battle is still between Sunni and Shiite, the Arabs are the Sunnis and the Persians are the Shiites. And so this idea that you want to rally Arab support, then you would be rallying the Sunnis. But ISIS is the Sunni group in Iraq. So you can't rally Arab support to oppose Arabs. It's like we send out children to do our bidding in the world who are absolutely clueless as to what's happening. And this division between Sunni and Shia is 1,400 years old. It isn't going away. You aren't going to create an inclusive state between Sunnis and Shias unless one or the other is empowered and has absolute dictatorial control over the other. You know, there were a minority of Shia in Syria, and they had dictatorial control over the Sunnis. There were a minority of Sunnis in control over Iraq, and they held dictatorial control over the Shias. In Iran, there are an overwhelming number of Shia holding dictatorial control over the Sunnis. The Sunnis have no power. Every Islamic country is this way. One side or the other, and it's typically the Sunnis, it's only Shia in the three countries in the world. Iran, I think there's five, but two of which are immaterial. But Iran, Iraq, and Syria are the only material countries in the world that have Shia dominant governments. And those governments have to be dictatorial, because if they were not, there is no country in the world ever where there has been non-dictatorial authority over a country that allowed both Shia and Sunnis equal rights, equal access, equal protection. It has never happened. It is never going to happen. What we're asking for is an absolute delusion. It's, and if this was equal rights for all people, then how come America was formed by absolutely obliterating the rights of the native peoples? You know, how in the world is America out preaching this kind of, let's include everybody, give everybody rights, when we obliterated the rights of the native peoples that were here? And then with Manifest Destiny, the Mexicans and the Spanish had, as well as the British and French, had large sections of land that they had claimed we didn't have any interest in sharing. I mean, America is a complete hypocrite to be requesting this. Now, then you go to the Kurds. The Kurds have been, for centuries, the largest racial group in the world without a homeland, without any autonomy. You know, there's this big cry for the mythical people known as the Palestinians, of which there is no racial connection between them. There have never been a country. They've never been a people. There's never been an ethnic group called Palestinians. And they're claiming somebody else's country. Well, the Kurds that occupy large sections of eastern Turkey are deprived of all rights by the Turks. The Kurds that occupied northeastern Iraq were afforded no rights by Saddam Hussein. The American invasion force wanted to give them no rights, no autonomy. And they control, occupy, don't have any control, large sections of northwestern Iran. But the Iranians give them absolute no political autonomy. And now the United States, even after the Kurds have said, you know, we're going to create our own army, and we're going to live in our own communities, and we're going to fight anybody that tries to take that away from us, because finally we can live without being abused by fellow Muslims. And the United States is trying to take that away from them. We can't resolve the Kurdish issue unless the world decides to give the Kurds a homeland carved out of northern Iraq, eastern Turkey, and northern Iran. That is the only solution for the Kurds. It's the antithesis of what Kerry is requesting. And there is a 0% chance that Iraq, on a fairly even basis between Shia and Sunnis, can be an integrated country without absolute draconian dictatorships involved. Now, so what we're asking for is absolutely impossible. You don't squander blood and coin, pursuing the impossible. There's another story that is out of Iraq today, speaking of the Christians in Nineveh. It's the oldest continually extant Christian community in the world. Now, those who listen to this program know that I am anti-Christian. I am anti-Muslim. I am anti-Christian. I'm opposed to Judaism. I'm opposed to all religions. I'm also opposed to politics and patriotism. I have, for example, watched the Copt Christians in their ceremonies, and it just repulses me. I don't, however, want to stand quiet when Christian girls are raped, when Christian girls are kidnapped, when Christians are murdered, when their homes and their churches are burned, often with them burned alive inside. They are duped by their religion. And I don't want to stand up in any way for their religion, but they don't deserve what Islam is giving them in Egypt, in Syria, and Iraq. And the fact is that there were nearly a million Christians in Iraq living peacefully, without being terrorized, going publicly to church prior to the American invasion. And after the American invasion, somewhere between 80 and 90% are gone. That's on our soul, America. We caused that to happen. And now that that ISIS, which is resolutely fundamentalist Islamic, has taken control of Nineveh, what we now have is Christian women must dress like Muslim women. If they're unmarried, they must become sex slaves to Muslims. And all Christians now, by edict of ISIS, must comply with Sharia law. Now, the press will write, well, see, their homes won't be destroyed and their churches won't be burned. They won't be looted. They won't be tortured so long as they comply with Sharia law. So what's the big deal? Well, under Sharia law, their daughters will be raped forever. Under Sharia law, their daughters will be kidnapped and forced to convert to Islam. Under Sharia law, that any outward symbol of Christianity will be ruthlessly prosecuted. Their churches can no longer have any Christian insignia, no crosses, inside or out. If they are caught at any time talking to anybody about their religion in public, they'll be killed. If they attempt to influence anything around them, if they attempt to participate in the community, they'll be killed. If someone converts to Christianity, they'll be killed. That's the nature of Sharia law. That is what now the Christians in Nineveh, which represent some 10% of the Christians that were once in Iraq, are faced with. Those that have fled Iraq have gone to Sweden, Germany, the United Kingdom, and America. However, Western governments are almost universally adverse to assisting them because the West doesn't want to consider the fact that Islam is death to Christians. It's not just harassing them, that it tortures them, burns them alive, and that if any people needed asylum, it would be Iraqi Christians, but for the most part, there is no preference. They can't come in as exiles, as refugees, because no nation wants to admit that Islam is the problem. Now, you're speaking now about an inclusive Iraq. with exception of a dictator who is a secular dictator, who forces, under severe penalty, Christians to be left alone. They're annihilated. Look what happened even with the Muslim Brotherhood and Sisi. When the Muslim Brotherhood took control of Egypt, the persecution on Christians escalated. But when the Sisi military junta took control, it became open season. Virtually every Copt church in Egypt has been destroyed. They meet in underground caverns now. They meet in burnt out hulks of buildings. And an unprecedented number of Christian girls have been kidnapped and raped. This is the consequence of Islam. Now, when we return to Shattering This, I am going to articulate the 7-step plan that I hinted at a couple of days ago. I'm going to go through it systematically and tell you what the world would have to do if it wished to eliminate this menace of Islamic terrorism. Because what we're witnessing now in Iraq and in Syria is going to affect the entire world. Yesterday and also on Friday, we spent a considerable amount of time discussing how what we're witnessing in Iraq today is the world's future. This is a problem that cannot be resolved. It's one of America's making. We invaded Iraq, gave Iraq to Iran, very substantially increased Iranian Shiite influence. The rest of the region rebelled against that. And as Iran came into control of Iraq and also Syria, and had huge influence in Lebanon through Hezbollah, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, to a lesser degree, Jordan, most certainly Kuwait, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia responded. And they began to, first they chastised America for creating the mess. Then they began to systematically arm Sunni Muslims in Syria because they knew that Sunnis were a majority in Syria and that they could start a proxy war in Syria that would counteract some of Iran's growing influence. And they realized that their window for doing so was very short in closing, because once Iran got nuclear weapons, it would all be for naught. So the Syrian civil war is a proxy war between Sunni Arab Muslims and the influence of Persian Shiites. It has claimed hundreds of thousands of lives. It was a war that America was spending enormous amount of time tongue-lashing Assad while they were arming the Muslim jihadists, the Sunnis, opposing him. Well, we armed them way too substantially. And after a while, Hezbollah became engaged and thwarted their advance. So they got the areas that they wanted. They were unable to advance and take Damascus due to Hezbollah's influence. And so now that they were extraordinarily well-armed, they crossed what is now a non-existent border into Iraq and seized control of all of the Sunni majority areas in Iraq. And it's not just ISIS anymore. It's ISIS plus the senior officers of Saddam Hussein's military, plus all of the professional leaders in Sunni Islam in Iraq. They have all banded together with ISIS. And it's a disaster. And there is no way to resolve this. They are now too well-financed, too well-armed, having confiscated billions of dollars in cash and billions of dollars worth of American weapons. And the Shiite military that America spent $25 billion equipping and training at every opportunity is retreating and abandoning the equipment that America supplied at great cost. So there is no solution. America can't go back into Iraq with a major force, Bombing's not going to do any good. There is everything that the world could attempt to do would only make this situation worse. So it's going to rage on, and it's going to take tens of thousands, if not many, many hundreds of thousands of lives until one side or the other loses. And it's clearly going to be the Shias that ultimately lose. But this war will continue to be fought until the Shia regimes in Iran and Syria fall. And when they do, the Sunni jihadists are going to go back around the world, and they're going to perpetrate the most heinous terrorist acts the world has ever witnessed. So, what could be done to stop this? This was our program, our discussion on Friday with IQ Al-Rasuli. What can be done to stop this? Well, I'm going to begin, and then we'll continue in the first segment of the next hour. Now, before implementing this plan, the first thing I would do would be to host a summit of world leaders to explain it to them, to explain why it must be done and why there is no other civilized, viable, or moral alternative. And then I'd present the same case to the people around the world through a long series of nightly television presentations. First, point one, bluntly and boldly expose and condemn Islam as a terrorist dogma, as a declaration of war against all humankind, and do so exclusively using the Islamic scriptures, so that the world comes to realize how deceitful, foolish, counterproductive, uncivilized, immoral, destructive, and deadly the religion actually is at its root. We'll be back.